You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And it's podcast time. I'm Brant Parsons with Matt Marshall, College Gridiron 365 podcast. This is the one where we look ahead to a scrumptious week of football in week three, a matchup-filled weekend, some great top 25 games, some great not top 25 games to talk about, and some interesting state pairings coming up. But before we get to that, Matt, news broke on Wednesday from the ACC, the conference deciding to relocate championships in eight different sports from the state of North Carolina in retaliation or because of the HB2 bill that is still on the books in North Carolina. We've seen the NBA move the All-Star game. The NCAA has already made this move with their events they were hosting this academic school year in North Carolina. So the ACC makes the move yesterday, and of course it is of interest to us because one of the games being moved is the football championship, the first weekend of December. It was going to be played in Charlotte. It now needs a new home. And hey, we've got a shiny stadium right in downtown Orlando that would love to have the ACC championship game there. Matt, we talked about it yesterday, and there's a lot of moving parts, and you'll get into some of the issues facing it in Orlando. But as we look at the landscape on this ACC football championship, we know Central Florida Sports Commission is bidding on all of the championships that the ACC is relocating. You would assume that they would have a chance to gain at least some of them, but obviously the football is the crown jewel. Over $32 million pumped into the economy, almost $17 million direct spending into the economy when it is hosted there. Where are we looking at right now? What are you seeing with the ACC football championship and the chances that it comes to Orlando, where Orlando stands in the quest to get this big game?
Well, I'm sure as soon as the ACC announced that they were pulling their events out of North Carolina, that we saw some of these cities, as you mentioned, Orlando, Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa, maybe scrambling their sports commissions looking to see if it was, you know, possible to have to host these games, especially as you mentioned the football championships. I know Orlando is interested in, obviously they're interested in putting premier events into that facility now that they've spent over $200 million a couple of years ago to renovate it. They would love to get a game like that, especially if it worked for their schedule. The problem is they have the high school championship games that weekend, and so now they have to look around and decide, you know, what's the best way to handle that? Can they somehow move those games? Can they move them somewhere to, like, Daytona, Daytona Beach, which they were mentioned to be going, you know, they bid on the games themselves early on, but Orlando ended up getting them. Or do they go to maybe UCF, you know, which has a shiny stadium there as well, to host those games? And I'm sure coaches at UCF would love the opportunity to have that high school talent in their own backyard, so to speak. So, and then you look at some of the other cities, you know, Jacksonville, which hosted the games back in early 2000. I'm sure they would be interested, although they have the Jaguars playing on that Sunday after December 3rd when the game's supposed to go off. So that might be a little more difficult to pull off. A city like Miami, which just like Orlando, has just put a lot of money into renovating their stadium and has just debuted it. The Dolphins are off that weekend, so it'll be an excellent opportunity maybe for them to host that game. Tampa would seem like an interesting option, but you know they're busy trying to get ready to host the national championship and you know the Outback Bowl, so I don't think they're necessarily that keen on trying to get that game as well. And then you look outside the state of Florida, there's going to be some interest probably from FedEx Field where the Washington Redskins are at, and maybe a couple other venues as well. I know the ACC would love to keep it on the East Coast, obviously, and they'd love to keep it somewhere warm, possibly, where you get a lot of fans to come. And I think that's why Orlando and Florida in general seems like the perfect place to host these games. It's whether or not they can come to some sort of agreement, make all of these pieces work together, and make this game happen. Because as you mentioned, it's a lot of economic impact for whichever community gets it. And so there's a lot of people are very interested in trying to bring this event to their area.
And you have to think, all things being equal, Orlando would be a front runner on this because they have the working relationship with the conference. They've shown they can host these sort of things, you know, neutral site games, bowl games. Orlando obviously has the hotels, the hospitalities, the restaurants, the infrastructure to have people come in. It's what we do in Orlando. It's a big part of the Orlando economy. All things being equal, Orlando would be in the mix. But that problem that remains is the FHSAA football championship when they have four games scheduled that weekend at the Citrus Bowl and what to do with those. And you mentioned the possible places, and of course Daytona Beach actually was the original winner in the bidding for these games. There are only two cities that even bid on hosting the football finals, and it was Orlando and Daytona Beach, and Orlando came in after Daytona Beach did and let them just bid first. They actually won the bid and then came into some technicality problems with some of the funds and who was handling it and decided not to host it. They reopened the bidding and Orlando came in and picked it up. I don't know if there's still a lot of bad blood there that would keep these games from being moved to Daytona Beach. Certainly it would be an option. UCF, you mentioned, is an option. And now outside of the George O'Leary reign at UCF, they are open to hosting things on that stadium's inside that stadium, and they're going to have a soccer tournament there in the spring. The issue there is technically right now at this point, UCF could host the American Championship.
Yeah.
Same thing with Tampa. USF could still technically host the American Championship. Do you move the high school games there? And then what happens if UCF catches fire and next thing you know, they're hosting the American title game? Right now, you may think that's laughable because of they're coming off an 0-12 season and there's talent in the league, you know, with Houston and Cincinnati and USF and all these schools that you would think would be hosting, but you never know what could happen, and that would be a terrible bind to be stuck into. If Orlando can find a place to move the high school games, though, I think they would be destination number one for the ACC. If that doesn't work out, I wouldn't be surprised to see this take place in Miami. They have a stadium down there, as you said, that's been renovated. It's gorgeous now and has, you know, the canopy top. They want to show that they can host events. They're trying to get back into a Super Bowl rotation. That's why they did the renovations down there in the first place, is because they wanted to get, much like with the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, wanted to get more neutral site games to get back in the mix for big time football hostings and, you know, probably beyond that in other sports. So I think those are the two that are going to be in the mix, and it may come down to what kind of strings can Orlando pull to get this game to be able to be played here. And I honestly, at this point, I can't speak on how that's going, and I don't know if anybody can, because I mean, the moment this happened, Matt, you and I, we were instantly thinking of places, and you're on the phone already trying to get in contact with the folks that might be able to talk to you about this. And I don't know if anybody was ready for it, and they're probably all scrambling, and they're probably still at this point, just a day removed from the announcement, still scrambling, trying to make everything make some sense and figure things out.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people right now just trying to you know, get themselves kind of organized, get their presentations together, go to the ACC, try to figure out if this actually works for them. Because let's not forget, it's not just the stadium. You also have to look around at the hotels. You have to look around the restaurants. Are there any events going on in your community? We obviously, Central Florida hosts a lot of other things besides sports. There's a lot of conventions, you know, have sorts of things going on almost year-round. So it's not, you have to make sure that you have the available hotel space to have, you know, 65,000 people come down here, maybe 70,000 people come down here for these games. So you have to make sure you're prepared in that way as well. And that requires, you know, locking down some of these hotels to make sure you have them in case that happens. As you mentioned, UCF, you know, or USF, if both those teams are somehow in that mix, they're also going to have to figure out, you know, what do you do with that as well. You can't wait on that because obviously that would mean maybe waiting 4 or 5 weeks, you know, into the conference season to kind of guess. And I don't think ACC wants to wait that long. I think they'd like to get this kind of wrapped up. And then my last point would be, this is an opportunity. Listen, the ACC has a deal, renewed their deal with Charlotte up to 2019. But if this situation in North Carolina doesn't get itself worked out, if there isn't a change there, there's an opportunity now for a city to maybe make a pitch that will go beyond this. Maybe there's some deal worked out where, you know, the ACC decides, okay, we're gonna scrap our deal with Charlotte. We'll just, you know, take care of that, and then that gives an opportunity in the future to host this game. So let's say it is Orlando or Miami, and you put on a good show. There's an opportunity there that maybe the ACC considers, you know, bringing it to you for 2 or 3 years, you know, in a row, just to give you this opportunity. So it's a big deal. I mean, you know, we know Camping World Stadium here in Orlando hosts some great events. It's hosted a great event already, Florida State and Ole Miss and the Camping World Kickoff. They got 3 bowl games. They've got the Florida Classic between Bethune-Cookman and Florida A&M. To add this game would be huge for this for the stadium, huge for what they're trying to do, and huge for this community. So again, there's so much more riding on that than just one time game.
And of course, the ACC would be very thankful to anybody that takes on this task on a short scale. And I think that may even play well, as you said, down the road when these contracts come back up. Even if they go back to Charlotte in 2017, when that deal is done, you certainly may have a chance to be in play for the game after that. But it's something we will continue to follow. But Matt, on the field this weekend, some incredible games, and I'm going to segue from your talking about the kickoff opener at the Citrus Bowl into the game that will kick off our Saturday 12 o'clock start on ABC. Florida State, now the number 2 team in the country, heading to play Louisville at number 10. First time ESPN Game Day has been to Louisville. This is a big game. And this is a Florida State team that showed that they may be the best in the country in the second half against Ole Miss, and showed that they may be terribly outmatched in the first half. Which team shows up for this one? But the intriguing thing on this, and we talked about it on our pick show, is obviously at quarterback. And you have DeAndre Francois, the young quarterback at Florida State, who's already making a name for himself, and Lamar Jackson for the Cardinals, who is a jack of all trades. Huge weekend last night against Syracuse. If it was on national TV on a Saturday night, he'd be the Heisman front runner right now after that performance. But certainly a force to be reckoned with. This game will come down to, I think you would agree, come down to who can limit mistakes and who can take advantage of opportunities that are presented throughout the game, because this could be a close game throughout, because these teams are both high-powered and firing on all cylinders to start the season.
Yeah, they really are. And as you mentioned, you know the quarterbacks matchup obviously is going to be huge. Lamar Jackson, I saw a stat today, I think it was Pro Football Focus, that said that 14% of Lamar Jackson's passing attempts, have been dropped by his receivers. So it's even amazing. I think it's the highest in the FBS. I think that's an incredible stat if you think about what more he could be doing. He's got over 1,000 total yards of offense so far this season, over 13 total touchdowns. 115 FBS teams don't even have that many touchdowns on offense this year. So incredible stats. I think the key to this game for Florida State to win is containing Jackson, is making sure he doesn't get out into space, making sure he is able to make these kind of plays like he's been doing the last couple weeks. I think they have to do a better job of containing him. They have to do a job of shutting down the receivers, you know, making sure that they don't get too far ahead of them, you know, so they have those big plays. That's something that Louisville likes to take advantage of. And I think also, to me, the key in this game is going to be Dalvin Cook. As much as DeAndre Francois is getting attention, as much as we're talking about Lamar Jackson, I think Dalvin Cook's going to be key here, because he's had a slow start the first couple of games. I think if Florida State can get him going, if they can get him to kind of get the ball rolling, start getting him running downhill, I think that opens up the door for so much more in their offense, because I think then you can do some things with Francois, giving him opportunities, whether it's throwing the ball or running the ball and design run plays to do some stuff as well. So, listen, the defense had an outstanding performance against Charleston Southern last week. I think they had something like 2 missed tackles. That's the kind of performance they need to have against Louisville. They need to come in there. They need to take care of business. I think they will. I like Florida State in this game.
And one final thing on that also is Florida State's not Syracuse, and you're not gonna be able to just do things maybe that you're able to do last weekend just because you're athletically superior to Syracuse. So it'll come down to execution for Louisville in this game. And Florida State has been in a big game already this year. You have to wonder what the lights being on, shining bright on the Cardinals will do for them. I'm taking Florida State in this game too. And because I agree with you. I think they take advantage of mistakes. I think they're a better disciplined program. And I think they're just a tad more talented at the places where you need to be. But that is going to be a delightful kickoff to our Saturday afternoon. And then after that at 3:30, Alabama visits Ole Miss in an SEC tilt. You and I somewhat disagreed on this game when we talked about it yesterday. We both pick Alabama to win. I'm curious to watch this game because we've seen what Ole Miss has been able to do the last 2 years against Alabama, stunning them when they were number one in one of those games. But a two-game win streak over Alabama for Ole Miss is unheard of. They've only beat them 10 times ever on the field, and two of those 10 have come in the last 2 years. They get Alabama at home, but Alabama comes in rolling on almost every cylinder, beating USC in the opener and then blowing out a good Western Kentucky team in week two once they got going. The run game could be improved for Alabama, but now we're just being nitpicky. Because they look like the top team in the country, but it's on the road, it's Ole Miss, and we saw at least, you saw it in person, what Ole Miss is capable of in that first half against Florida State. If they can pull that out, I think they have a chance. You, however, see this as being a runaway early and a lot of Vern Lundquist stories in the second half, just filling time as Bama rolls the 3-0.
Yeah, I think Alabama can win this game convincingly this year. I think that going into that Florida State game, the season kickoff, I think Ole Miss had a lot of great parts, but they lost a couple guys in the secondary. You know, they were banged up on that in that area. And I think that's the key matchup in this game to me, is I think you look at Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts. He's done an amazing job as a true freshman playing in this offense. Listen, last week, you know, Calvin Ridley and Ardarius Stewart, he targeted them 21 times. He got them out, was able to take advantage of that to put up some big numbers. You mentioned that their running game hasn't been as crisp as I think Nick Saban would like to see it. And I think, you know, again, you're talking about a defense that continues to be outstanding, even though they lose tons of talent every year in and year out to the NFL. They did a good job last week against Western Kentucky, a high-powered Western Kentucky offense. So I don't see this being an issue. I think they can handle Chad Kelly. We saw when Kelly is pressured, he doesn't make good decisions sometimes. I think if they can get to Kelly, they make him to make some bad bad throws. Akeem Judd, their running back, had 68 yards after contact last week. They've got to contain him as well. I think Alabama does that, and I think they win this game convincingly.
I talked about the difference between Syracuse and Florida State's defense. Bama maybe even a step better than Florida State at times on defense. But you saw it in that first game, and to reiterate your point, when Florida State's defense started getting pressure on Kelly, started getting in the backfield, they forced him into mistakes. I think eventually Bama does that in this game too. I just see this being maybe a little bit closer than you do in that one, but certainly an interesting start to the SEC season for the both of them. 3:30 on CBS. Three big games on Saturday night. USC Stanford, which we actually didn't even include on our list to talk about. Michigan State heads down to South Bend to face Notre Dame. Notre Dame righted the ship after a loss to Texas. They have a quarterback, DeShone Kizer. He's the guy now. I think that stability should help the Irish going forward. We know very little about this Michigan State team. They're ranked number 12. They struggled with Furman in their opener on a Friday night and then didn't play last weekend. So we don't know much really tangentially about this Michigan State team, except for the expectations are high. We know a little bit about this Notre Dame team and certainly saw them rebound from that Texas loss last week. So intriguing game, obviously. Anytime Notre Dame plays a Big Ten team, it's intriguing. But this one, prime time on Saturday, should be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, it really should be. What I'm looking forward to in this game, and I think it will be key for Notre Dame, is they need to get that running attack going. They need to get a guy like Josh Adams. They need to get him out and take advantage of establishing those running routes, because I think that's going to help Deshaun Kizer really get comfortable in the pocket, not being forced to have to make plays, you know, scramble to make plays on his own when things break down. And Adams had a great performance last week against Nevada, 105 yards, 77 of those after contact. So he's a key for them. That and Terrion Falston, I think those two guys would be key for them as well. I look for a guy whose name I know I'm going to mispronounce, Equanimeous St. Brown, one of the best names in college football right now. Seems to be a key target for Kizer as a wide receiver. And also, I think Notre Dame, if they're going to win this game, they've got to do a better job of tackling. They missed so many tackles the first two games against Texas and against Nevada. They can't afford to do that against a Michigan State team, which isn't afraid to go into South Bend and beat a good Notre Dame team. They've done it in the past. You know, Mark D'Antonio, one of the most underrated college football coaches in the country, he knows how to win. He knows how to win on the road. And I think they're not afraid to go into South Bend to get this win. Notre Dame almost needs this win. If they lose a second game this season, I think they're going to pretty much be done being a factor in the college football playoff, unless something craziness happens. I think it's going to be hard for a non-conference team to get into the playoff with two losses. So this is lots of key components in this game going up Saturday night.
And talk about Michigan State, a guy and a team we're about to talk about, Urban Meyer in Ohio State. He's lost, what, four games, I believe, is the total since he's been at Columbus. Two of those to Michigan State. Sparty, they know how to get ready for these big games. They won't be ill-prepared. You can at least be assured of that. And the other game that we are going to talk about, the fourth game between ranked opponents on Saturday, a game that we really were salivating over heading into the year, maybe a little bit of a tarnish on it after Oklahoma lost their opener to Houston. But Ohio State, the young Ohio State, which has moved up to number three in the rankings, shockingly, is heading to Norman to face the number 14 Oklahoma Sooners, which is probably an insult to them to have been dropped so far after the loss to Houston. But, you know, rankings don't mean a whole lot now, but just from a perception standpoint, you may not realize just how big this game is and how tight these two teams are as far as talent levels. Baker Mayfield, of course, the leader in Oklahoma, and they got everything sorted after their opening week loss. But this one, this has all the makings of the game of the week with the high-powered Ohio State offense coming in there, a defense that can hang with anybody on talent. The inexperience is the question with the Buckeyes. This will be their first test on the road. But as you mentioned on our pick show yesterday, after I picked Oklahoma, Urban Meyer has not lost a road game at Ohio State. So as much as Mark D'Antonio knows how to get Michigan State ready, Urban Meyer knows how to get his guys ready for a road game. You have to think that they're young, but maybe they won't be as intimidated as other young teams will be. They're used to playing in front of 100,000 people at home, but it is the first road test of the season for the Buckeyes, and just an intriguing game on Saturday night on Fox with a 7:30 kickoff.
Yeah, this is the game that I'm really looking forward to. Don't get me wrong, I think Florida State-Louisville is a great matchup, and Alabama-Ole Miss is a great matchup, but this is the game I really want to see because I think there's a lot of bragging rights going into this game. You got the Big Ten against the Big 12. Obviously, Ohio State won a national title a few years back. They're really kind of up and coming. You look at what they've done with the amount of talent that Urban Meyer has managed to get into that program. They lose so much this past offseason, and yet they look just as dominant as they've looked up, you know, last couple seasons. To me, this game's going to come down to defense. I think Ohio State's defense, obviously, is even though they don't return that many starters, I think it's three, they still have so much talent there. Their secondary, you know, the first two games, I know it was Bowling Green and Tulsa, but their secondary looks outstanding again. A guy like Marshawn Lattimore, who had two interceptions last week, really is becoming that kind of shutdown secondary player. When you're looking at Gary and Conley, the same thing. To me, that's the key. I think that if Ohio State's defense can contain Baker Mayfield, if they can find a way to force them to do some things they don't want to do, contain that high-powered offense of Oklahoma, I think that they win this game. I think what helps Urban Meyer going into this week is the fact that one of his old proteges, Tom Herman at Houston, put together a pretty good game plan to beat Oklahoma in the first week. So my guess is that he was on the phone with them, he spoke with them, they talked a lot and shared some details. So I give the advantage to Ohio State in this game. I think they go in and they find a way to win this game. And I think this is a huge statement win for Urban Meyer, because if Ohio State gets this and somehow Florida State loses or Clemson looks bad or whatever, there's a possibility Ohio State all of a sudden jumps into number two, you know, in the rankings going into the week. And let's say Alabama were to lose as well. We could be talking about Ohio State being the number one team in the country when it's all said and done on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, that'd be some fascinating stuff. And I think the key for Ohio State is going to come down on offense. And that was their struggle last season at times to find rhythm. The offense looked great against Bowling Green. It struggled against Tulsa for a half on Saturday. And really, that game was tight until the defense broke it open towards the end of the first half with two pick sixes. They went in for an extended halftime because of the weather, over an hour, and then JT Barrett came out and the offense sprung to life and got its footing back and back on stride, and he was able to work the magic. You can't do that, though, against Oklahoma. The offense is going to have to come out ready to go and in its stride from the start, and that's going to be something from an Ohio State side to watch. You know the defense can make plays, but the offense, it can't count on the defense to keep it in this game for too long because Oklahoma is so loaded. This game, I think, could go either way. I'm on record of picking Oklahoma, but this is the game, at least for the first month of the season, that I've been looking forward to because it's just you just saw it on the schedule all summer long that these two teams were going to meet, and you knew it was going to be big. Tonight, a team that has already beaten Oklahoma, which you have mentioned, Thursday night football, Houston and Cincinnati. If you're listening to this the day we recorded the podcast, and the game is tonight, and we talked about this on our show yesterday, Houston should be a favorite going to Cincinnati, but this is one of those American teams that they can at least make a statement against, one of the better American teams on paper. It will be national TV, so it is a chance to be seen. Houston got their big win. They have Louisville at the end of the season, but they've got a bunch of games in between that aren't going to have the same marquee value as the big schools are going to get. It's the luck of the dice of being in the American. They are not going to get those marquee matchups, the high attention matchups. So when they get a chance, like they will Thursday night on national TV, they have their chance to make another statement. And while you would think Houston winning this game is probably an afterthought, it's going to be how they win this game and what kind of impression they can continue to make on the folks that are going to be making the determinations later in the season on if Houston's good enough to be considered to be one of those four teams in the college football playoff.
Yeah, they're going to have to put on a good show. I mean, this is kind of reminiscent to a couple of years ago when the American, you know, had a lot of Thursday night matchups. UCF was in a lot of those games, Thursday and Friday night matchups. These are opportunities for your team to make a big showcase on national TV, and you may not get those games later on when you're facing some more inferior opponents. So really, Houston's got to come out and really be impressive. You look at the fact that Greg Ward could be back in this game, be 100%. He missed last week. It would be great for that for Houston if that happens. You look at their offense, and their offense has been able to do some good stuff. Defensively, this team takes advantage of mistakes. It's been doing that the last couple of years under Tom Herman. They need to do the same sort of thing against the Cincinnati team that really has struggled early on and really, you know, is looking to kind of establish their own identity. A win over a ranked Houston team would be huge for them. But I like the Cougars in this game. I think they win this matchup, and I think they win it pretty convincingly as well.
And we still have to talk about UCF and Florida and maybe a little Miami, but before we jump back to the state, I'm going to throw it out and give you a chance to pick a game or two outside the top 25 that maybe has your interest peaked heading into this weekend. There's so many games. I mean, I sent you an email, I believe, on Monday as we were doing show prep, and I said, here are the games we're going to pick, but there's just a plethora, I may not have used that word, but a plethora of second-tier games that are just as intriguing that we certainly could have taken time to talk about. So now let's do at least on a couple of them, but tell me a game or two that stand out for you this weekend that maybe aren't the top 25 marquee game, but something you're going to be keeping your eye on.
Well, I think, you know, a couple of them are in the SEC. Texas A&M at Auburn. You know, A&M's come out with a really strong start. You know, it had to be Kevin Sumlin's, you know, there was a lot of attention in the offseason whether, you know, this was going to be a critical year for them. They've done a great job so far. They're going to Auburn, and Auburn, you know, has its issues, obviously, with an early loss to Clemson. They're still struggling finding a quarterback, finding some sort of consistency on offense. You know, a second loss by Auburn, the first in the SEC, would be tough for them to come back, you know, bounce back from if they want to compete for the West division. Mississippi State at LSU, we know about LSU's problems early on. It seems to be they're starting to make some moves at quarterback. Danny Etlin coming in to start this week. Leonard Fournette is supposedly, who didn't play last week, is supposed to play this week. You know, again, a huge opportunity for them at home. They've got to beat a Mississippi State team if they want to be even considered a factor in the West. And also, you know, if they lose, it puts more pressure on Les Miles for being back. And then, you know, I'm going to throw one out there that I think is going to be kind of interesting. USF at Syracuse. I know they're not ranked teams. I know this is not one of those, you know, splashy games. But you talk about USF 2-0 doing a great job, getting a lot of buzz. Willie Taggart's done good work there. You look at a Syracuse team, obviously Dino Babers in his first season. They didn't, you know, they struggled against Louisville, but they still put up a lot of points and a lot of yards. I think this could be a very high-scoring affair when it's all said and done.
And you want, if you're the American, you want to see your top-tier teams be able to battle at least with the mid-to-bottom-tier teams in the Power 5 conference. That's an interesting one to watch. Along with North Dakota State, Iowa, which is interesting just because of the tradition of North Dakota State and the resurgence of Iowa. The game I'm curious to watch is Oregon and Nebraska. And yeah, Oregon probably on paper is a better team than Nebraska. The Cornhuskers certainly not where they were even 10, 15 years ago. But the Pac-12 was left out of the playoff last year. It is not a secret. Everybody knows that. Their chance, and a lot of their games are at night, and you don't get to see them. This is a game where you'll at least see parts of this game, and you'll see the highlights, and you'll know what happens to it. And it is a Pac-12 team going against a Big Ten team, certainly a Big Ten team with a reputation, a long reputation in college football. So a chance for a game Oregon probably should win. On the road makes it a little tougher, but certainly a game that helps the Pac-12 resume. Anytime that you can do these cross-country, or I guess half cross-country, but these matchups and get these Pac-12 teams a chance to play some of the teams from the Midwest and East, it only helps the Pac-12 for them to get a win. And I think this is one to watch to see what Oregon can do and kind of help that Pac-12 narrative. There's a lot of good football being played out West. Usually it's just Matt and I on the East Coast that are still up watching it because the games are so late at night, but this one won't be, and it'll be a chance to see Oregon in a friendlier time slot. Before we finish up the podcast, though, two games that I did want to touch upon involving state teams, leaving the locals for last, and a game you'll be at. UCF returns home from their game against Michigan to host Maryland. Maryland's second trip into the state in as many weeks. They were at FIU last week. Maryland flying high. They've won two games they should have won, but they've won them with a lot of points. And UCF coming back from a loss against Michigan, but a loss that may not have been as emotionally damaging as some losses because it was Michigan. It was the number 5 team in the country at the time, and they certainly had some flashes of what's to come for UCF with the speed and the hitting and that sort of thing. Justin Holman, still don't know his status. Scott Frost has basically said, I'm not going to tell you guys anything about anything on injury. So it's going to be a pothole filled time when he's at UCF, finding out how guys are really feeling. But I think, and I made this pick yesterday, but I think the key for UCF obviously is Justin Holman. If he is able to play this game, he showed last week against Michigan before he came out that he was able to move this offense, and you could kind of see him maturing into this new offensive system. They got into field goal range twice in that first half. Special teams was a disaster for the Knights against Michigan. It certainly hurt them on some punts also, but he showed some flashes of what he can do in this offense. If he is close to 100% healthy, they get to be at home. They get Maryland. This is one of those bottom tier Big Ten teams. Certainly a beatable team. It'd be interesting to watch. I want to see how UCF continues to grow and show these flashes of youth and speed and fierce and all those tag words. But now they get a chance to do it at home against a Big Ten opponent, and that's what I'm looking forward to seeing in this game. What about you, Matt?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we talked about it in our show that, you know, to me, these are the kind of building block games that Scott Frost and UCF need as they rebuild this program, you know, is they need to have key games against Power 5 teams. And I'm not as sold as much as you are, you know, with UCF maybe winning this game. I think Maryland has done a great job early on. I think DJ Durkin is you know, obviously, again, another talk about Tom Herman coming from the school of Urban Meyer, DJ Durkin, the same sort of thing. I think he's done a great job. I think he'll continue to do that. They have played an up-tempo style of offense, very similar to what UCF does. I know DJ Durkin said on his teleconference call earlier this week that shouldn't be a factor for his defense. They should be prepared to face that. I think Maryland wins this game. I think it's a close game, and I think the fact that, again, these are games that UCF needs, whether they win or lose, just to kind of, you know, help build up the players, help them learn what they're going to be facing in the future if they want to be a power, you know, a power program. And I think it also helps out recruiting. You're going to have a lot of recruits in the stands as well. These are the games that will help get you some of those top-notch quality kids that down the road could help bring that program, you know, 1 or 2 years away from being a major contending program.
And the last game to talk about, the first weekend, you won't be at Gainesville since you'll be at the UCF game, but you've watched the Gators play twice already this year. They get North Texas on Saturday, a seemingly third W on the season. The Gators last week, we know how good this defense is. We knew how good this defense was going to be. But the offense against a bad Kentucky team, but nonetheless, the offense showed that it may be coming around and coming of age and starting to develop into what Jim McElwain promised and what he envisioned when he took over this program. Antonio Callaway likely out. He may even be out. I know it's on our website. So you're going to be missing some skill positions in this game, but it's about staying healthy for Tennessee. That's next week. But to what I'm watching in this game is the continuing resurgence of that offense and the ability to make big plays and stretch the field and also run the ball. They haven't been able to run the ball for what seems like eons now. But the ability to run the ball but also stretch the field with big plays, and sometimes those two go hand in hand because you open up the running by opening up the field deep. But to see that offense continue to evolve and grow against North Texas leading up to that big game next week against Tennessee, to me, that is what's worth watching in this game. I don't think Gators are going to lose in North Texas. We're past those days. But to see if this offense can continue going for what you've seen them do for 2 weeks so far, Matt.
Yeah, I think that's, to me, is the key component in this game is, you know, they need to get, you know, continue to get Luke Del Rio those reps. You know, I mean, we talk about, you know, a guy who doesn't have a lot of college experience under his belt, you know, transfer 2 or 3 times. He needs a guy that needs those reps. And I think having that opportunity, having what they've seen, what he's been able to do, he looked better from week 1 to week 2, still isn't satisfied. I think going into week 3, you'd like to see him continue his development. You'd like to see the offense continue to stretch the field, take advantage of some long plays, take advantage of getting the ball to really their playmakers. You know, let them kind of take advantage of things. Get that running game going. Put together, you know, 12, 13, 14 play drives that take up 6 or 7 minutes. Wear out your opponent. Defensively, as you mentioned, the defense has been outstanding. I just want to see in this game, they should win this game convincingly. I think we both agree that. But you just want to see them continue to move forward in development. You don't want to see them fall backwards, make this game close in any stretch of the imagination, play down to their opponent. Because as you mentioned, they're going to be, their schedule gets way tougher now. Now that they're getting through this part, they're going to start facing the Tennessees, the LSUs, you know, teams like that on their schedule, Arkansas. So they've got to continue to grow as a program. I think we need to see that this week.
And, you know, on my my bowl projections that dropped this morning for the first time this year, I have the Gators going to the Sugar Bowl. So apparently I'm back on the Gator stuff there. I'm seeing good things from them. It could all change next week against Tennessee, but as of today on my bowl projections, I have the Florida Gators heading to the Sugar Bowl as the SEC East champs and the SEC runner-up to Alabama. But that game is on Saturday night also. Matt, week 3, it promises to be good. Let's hope it lives up to the billing. Week 1 did, and in week 2, overdid its billing. So let's hope week three can continue with some great games and some storylines for us to talk about on Sunday morning.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I think with some good matchups. And that's the thing. You know, it seemed like we thought week two was going to be just kind of, and it turned out to be actually pretty good. Lived up way past its expectations. And this week, you know, obviously some great matchups. As I mentioned, some teams that are ranked in the top three that could, you know, suffer. If they suffer some losses, we could see totally different top five teams going into the when the polls are released on Sunday.
Or we could see the same top five remaining. There's a lot that could happen and a lot that could not happen. But either way, that's why they play the game. Matt, enjoy the weekend. Have fun out at UCF. We will talk again on the podcast on Sunday morning to recap all the games that we just talked about and any other top storylines that take place on Saturday. For Matt Marshall, I'm Brant Parsons. Thanks for listening to the College Gridiron 365 podcast brought to you by OrlandoSentinel.com.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.